Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, I am Annie McManus, and you are so welcome to a very special version of Changes that we're bringing you for the next couple of weeks over Easter, introducing Changes Focus. This is where we're going to be zooming in and focusing on some of the biggest themes of change that have come up again and again across the podcast. One of the things that doing this podcast has shown me over the years is just how universal change is and how it really does connect us all. And it's really interesting zooming in on one theme and then getting all these different takes on that one theme. So that's what we're going to do. Our first theme in our first ever Changes Focus is education. Now, most of us spend a significant part of our youth in some form of educational setting. There's so much change and growth that can happen in our university and school years, both negative and positive. And we're going to hear a beautiful smorgasbord of experiences on this episode. So coming up, you're going to hear from broadcaster Louis Theroux, comedian Rosie Jones, acting royalty Idris Elba and Michael Sheen. But to kick off, in one of our most popular episodes to date, the award-winning author, journalist and agony aunt, Dolly Alderton, shared with me about how school was particularly difficult for her when she was a teenager.
Two fundamental things that I think can't be overlooked is I hated school. I really, really hated school.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, and I was in a bad school. I was in a school that really didn't suit me. And my parents really regret not taking me out, but I wasn't opening up to them. So they didn't really know the extent of it.
And what was going on at school?
I felt really bullied by the teachers.
Okay.
There were a few things that happened that I've really had to unpack in therapy of how much they've affected me and my self-esteem. Like, I remember I was kind of always a scatty kid. I'm a scatty person. And I remember my real name's Hannah. Dolly was the nickname I got in my late teens. There was an award at my school called the Hannah Alderton Award for Disorganization that was presented every year in front of that was named after me. And the girl was presented with a black bin bag. The prize was she would have to go around the school and pick up where all she'd left her, like exercise books and whatever. And it was this like big in-joke with the whole school.
Wow. Of all the girls, you were singled out. Remarkable, but also cruel.
Yeah.
And I don't think would be done these days.
No, because of course not.
People would look at that as being neurodiverse or something. You know what I mean? There'd be something that you could attribute it to where you would not be able to just single that out and slag someone off for
there it. Was never, there was never any conversation of like, this is a person who is struggling with this period of their life and the pressures of this like academic school. And you know, I'm not an academic person. I was incredibly young for my year. How do we like help her find this easier? I was just stressed every day. I was just like, I didn't get all my teachers. I was always late. I couldn't keep thoughts in my head. I felt like I couldn't perform properly. I felt like it was just a mess. And I felt like there was no strategy to support me.
Yeah. And how was your relationship with your self-worth, I suppose? You know, having had that gorgeous, very safe early childhood where you were loved, loved, loved and showing love, being able to reciprocate that love, I suppose, do you feel like these years eclipsed that somehow?
Yes,
and changed how you felt about who you were?
Yeah, I also, boys were particularly nasty to me. I was really bullied by some boys and I think that had a real effect. My experience is not unique to me. Arguably, I think that when someone dumps us out of the blue or we get fired from a job or we're humiliated in a social setting, I think that every single one of us at that point feels the twinge of an old wound of someone being nasty to us when we were 13 or 14. I just think that's how humans are made. I think that so much of self-esteem And identity is built by your how you're parented. And then I just think what's even more important of how what's built is how kids are with you and how teachers are with you at school. Right. I think that has an enormous part to play in it. You know, it also didn't help. I was 6 foot when I was 13. I totally hated myself.
And what about your body? What was that, your relationship with your body?
Bad.
Right.
Bad. Eat bad. Eating stuff. Not good.
Yeah.
But again, as well, it was not to normalize it. I think I was at an all girls school in the early noughties, and it was so an accepted part of all girls school culture. Everyone had an eating problem. There was self-harm everywhere. It was like this really, and no one was really talking about it in a way that I see now. Like, of course, teenagers, you know, something my therapist always says to me is, which is very pertinent to this podcast, like the moment when a human is in transition is when they are at their most vulnerable.
Yeah.
So that is why teenagers, one of the reasons why teenagers are so vulnerable, and it expresses itself in all different kinds of ways. I don't think that like those things aren't going on in schools now, but I just think we have a language for it in a way that we didn't when I was growing up.
The moment when a human is in transition is when they are at their most vulnerable. So profoundly true, and such a good example of why I love doing this podcast, because those moments of change are always such meaningful moments in our lives. In one of my favorite episodes of Changes ever, the amazing comedian Rosie Jones cited her biggest change in childhood as moving from an all-disabled school to a mainstream school as a young girl with cerebral palsy. This is what happened.
This sounds awful, and I am telling this story through the prism of a 4-year-old child. Sure. But I looked around at all the other children, and they had physical disabilities and intellectual disabilities, and I thought, why am I here? I can't explain it, but I innately knew that this wasn't a place I needed to be. So I went home and I said to my mum, I don't want to go there now. I want to go to big school. I couldn't walk at the time. And I said, if you let me go to big school, I promise I'll walk. I'll walk. And I taught myself, this is how driven and stubborn I am. I was like, well, I'm with all the people who can't walk. If I can just do a little two-leg action, I can get out of here. And I did. I saw one of my oldest friends yesterday, and she said, my first memory of you is 4 years old coming into the class, starting school, and everyone had to sit down, and I stood at the front and I said, hello, I'm Rosie. I have a disability called cerebral palsy, which means I talk slowly. But apart from that, I'm just like you. Now, A, that's amazing. But B, as an adult, I'm a little bit like, oh, why did you put it on a 4-year-old to explain herself? And that has carried through all my life. I feel like it's my responsibility to explain myself to people, which is on one side annoying, but on the other side amazing, because from a very young age I realised that I could break down barriers with humour. So even at 4 years old, I could go, hello, I'm Rosie, I wobble, but I'm not drunk. And that will make the other kids laugh. So when I started stand-up, I already knew I had that comedy edge, because I'd used it every time I entered any new space.
Rosie Jones, everybody, what a woman. So she chose her primary schooling as one of the biggest changes in her life, as did broadcaster and general icon Louis Theroux. So Louis talked about moving from a state school to a private boarding school when he was just 8 years old, and cited that as one of the biggest changes of his childhood.
One of the things, weird things happened, I felt so self-conscious about maybe not measuring up or not fitting in, that I began talking differently, and I actually got the nickname Posh Claude because they said I talked poshly. Whereas actually I'd just come from a state school. Like, I think I was overcompensating and trying to fit in by talking a bit like this and enunciating.
Oh, so it's like performative, It's kind of,
It was a hideous experience. Oh. What a bummer. I would say it distorted other aspects of my life and possibly my personality, right? I think it rendered me more or less incapable of talking to girls.
You describe yourself as like something created in a lab, a freakish man-child in culottes.
Yeah, a freakish man-child in culottes. Well, the culottes was because I'd suddenly grown very fast, so my trousers didn't reach my ankles.
Yeah.
So there was a time when...
Sorry, then, I didn't laugh.
It's a piccolo-voiced androgyne is the other phrase, meaning I had a high voice and I was, because I was a late developer, and then anyway, I mean, I could go down the rabbit hole on this.
You also say it was perfect for me. It's in some ways perfect for me in as much as it was founded on the two lodestars of my life, withering repartee and academic work. My geekiness, already in evidence, was about to be turbocharged. I mean, you worked so hard all the way through school and you got your entrance exams for Oxford when you were 16.
Yeah, well, that is true. Because I'd missed a year. So basically, at age 13, I moved on to a London
boarding school.
And then I skipped a year because that's just what they did. I don't know if they still do that. If you were considered to be academic, they would say, like, what was then called O-levels, now would be GCSEs. Like, do it. You can do them a year early. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
And then if you're a late developer, I can't remember how I addressed this in the book, but basically I was pubically challenged. I don't know if this is a thing for girls, for boys, like when you see other boys getting pubic hair and you haven't got pubic hair.
So does that correlate traumatic. To facial hair as well? Is it the same? I need to know all this.
Facial hair, you know, I don't think there's a fine different science about it, but basically you might get a little fluff on your upper lip, but the main thing is you're just looking for some evidence of incipient manhood in your nether regions. And you just want to see something growing. It's a bit like looking out on a lawn and being like, you know, do you ever plant bulbs? You're like, when are they going to come up?
Yeah.
It's like you just want some. And if you're sort of 15, let's say, as I was, you're doing your GCSEs or O-levels or whatever, and everyone around you, they're going, all right, Louis, You're like, yeah, fine. How are you doing? Yeah, good. And then the boys can be cruel. So they're like, oh, your voice is so piercing. Call me when your voice breaks. Like making kind of
horrible jokes. Cruel jokes.
To the fact that you are basically more or less a child physically. And so anyway, yeah, it's surprisingly withering and traumatic experience.
But you had your work.
But I had, so I buried myself in academic stuff. Mm. And then finally, I did my GCSEs. I got some pubic hair. And I'm fully man now. I'm happy to say in all departments. I don't think I really needed to say that.
Yeah.
And then hit sixth form and finally found some friends who I liked. And I don't, is that my next change?
Yeah, so you talked about that. But just before that, just to stay on the academia, when the acceptance letter came for Oxford, I find this really interesting. You said you read it with a weird blank feeling of inevitability. And then, well, of course. Yeah. Where did that come from, I suppose, that feeling of inevitability? Why were you so unsurprised by your passing these exams so early and so successfully?
Oh, wow. Anna, you're really getting into it.
Sorry.
I like it. I think there's two things I could say to that. One is that I'd done so much work. I'd sort of become a life support system for a kind of examination taking process. Do you know what I mean? Like, there were so many parts of life that I knew nothing about, social stuff, anything vaguely useful, but I did know how to sit and take an exam about medieval French history and write about the Valois kings of France. And so it wasn't, in a sense, easy or free of stress, but I just knew that's what I was supposed to do. And I think the other part of it is that I've always had a slight weird, the term of le mot juste, maybe anhedonic, like this, which means sort of like without pleasure, like this feeling of you feel a bit disconnected from it. And there's some part of me that almost short circuits pleasure, that if you've worked really hard and done something, you sort of just think, oh yeah. And then you get the good news, there's some part of you that, I don't know, it feels like I don't experience joy
in the way that you feel like you should.
In an uncomplicated way. You get a little letter and it's like, you have got in.
Yeah.
You're like, well, there it is. Or like, if you get an award, it feels very disconnected from the work that it's completely notionally rewarding. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I was delighted to get Idris Elba on Changes last year, and I learned so much about him. It was a really, actually really open, quite emotional conversation. He just had news of a death in his family, and he was feeling quite emotional that day anyway. So yeah, he really opened up. As a child, Idris Elba suffered from severe asthma, which led to a life-changing experience in his schooling.
I was in and out of hospital quite a bit as a young man.
And would these be long spells, like weeks or?
No, probably 2 weeks.
Right, got you.
You know, now they've got all the gizmos to help you breathe immediately. But then it was like, you know.
Scary.
You got to, yeah, it was so scary. For my mum, it was so scary. And it got to a point where actually I had to go to a school that was a bit more adapted to kids that had, you know, medical needs. And that was a life, talk about change, that was a life changing.
Was that a primary, primary school?
Yeah, it was a primary school.
Primary school. So yeah. Tell me about that change.
So I went from a primary school, normal school, where I was always in and out of the nurse's office or going to hospital, and they just said to me, said to my mum, look, this is really difficult for all of us, you know, we're scared that he's going to not get the care he needs in an emergency. So I went to a school called Stormont, which is still there. It's an amazing school for special needs. And, you know, for the most part, I'm fine running around, kicking ball, you know, like good. And then the moment the asthma attack, I'd be done. So I went to this school and, you know, some of the kids had severe special needs right across the spectrum. And I was like, I shouldn't be here. Nope, this is wrong. But at the time, you know, it ended up being one of the most sort of giving, most incredible experiences of my life. Like to this day, I feel, wow. I got to go to this incredible school where they had such care and attention. The educators were amazing. The facilities were unbelievable.
Yeah.
And not to mention, like, I learned to play the drums and play the trumpet and, you know, all in this school where they were just so happy to have a kid that was, quote unquote, able-bodied, if you like, that was encouraging to the other kids, you know? I suddenly became the best friend of everyone, and kids that were sort of in themselves would be in the classroom with me and feel like they were just at school. They didn't have a special need because I was a boy that wasn't, you know, just changed my whole perception. Like I saw kids that could barely, you know, speak and sing songs, do paintings. And I was like, what? Like, it just changed my whole mindset. Like, to this day, you can't tell me we can't do anything. We're all so lucky.
Yeah.
And we don't realize it. It's only when you're in that situation where you're looking around and there were such heavy restrictions on some people's lives, yet they are going for it. 100%. And just, man, it changed my life completely.
I can imagine it changed your perspective as well of, you know, marginalized people. You can imagine it's very leveling when you're in that kind of situation.
Yeah, completely. You just sort of appreciate what you have, and you appreciate, and you're not looking over the fence of what you haven't got, because what you have is enough and more than enough.
I never knew that about Idris Elba's childhood. It was a really insightful episode into his life. Now, of course, you can go back and listen to that whole episode again. So we've heard about bullying, we've heard about moving schools, being accepted, integrating, assimilating with our friends. Another thing that can happen in school is romance and our first romances. So introducing Michael Sheen, who talked about a change when his family moved back to Port Talbot in Wales after some time in England, and he had to move schools. And on doing that, he fell in love.
Ah, yes, girls. Funnily enough, I remember it's that move back to Port Talbot and being the new kid in the school and that kind of stuff. In retrospect, the girls were quite interested in me. I was the new boy and there was a sort of an interest.
Exotic guy coming in.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, with my Scouse accent and all that. And I was quite good at drawing and I was good at football. At the time, I wasn't aware of that stuff. I was just being me. But I can look back at it and go, I must have caused a little bit of a ripple when I arrived there. I remember very much being aware of like girls focusing on me now and again and being thrilled by that and quite scared and intimidated by that. So I remember that being a thing. Then as I went to comprehensive school around 11 or 12, I suppose that was when I started getting like interested in girls. I was doing all right because I was very good at the football, but I also was now starting to do school plays as well. And so no one could really take the mickey out of me for doing the school plays, because usually the lads who were doing sport would make fun of the boys who were doing the other stuff. They couldn't do that because I was better than them at the football. So they couldn't make fun of me for doing the theatre and vice versa. So I did quite well in that respect. But I suppose I was also, looking back on it, I was also probably quite a bit of a catch at the time. But I remember a girlfriend, she was an older woman. She was in the second year at comprehensive school and I was in the first year.
So she would have been 13, you would have been 12 or something?
Yeah. 11 and 12 or 12 and 13, around that sort of age. So I remember having like my first slow dance at a disco with her.
Yeah.
And that, and I was, you know, that was incredibly exciting. I was totally petrified of her.
Yeah.
And she would show up in the playground and be like, you, come with me. We would meet up at a playground near where I lived and that kind of, I mean, it was all very innocent. And then I remember something happened one day. We were in the local sweet shop. She came in and I remember she just finished with me. And I didn't know why. And it was very shocking.
Yeah.
But that set a template for later.
Yeah.
So by the time I was having like proper girlfriends and that, or starting to have proper girlfriends, I got to about 14, 15. And then I met someone in the youth theatre by the time I joined the youth theatre. Mm. And that was all so exciting and new. Mm. And you do these residential courses where everyone would stay in this big house and it was dormitories. And you would rehearse in the days and then do performances at the end of it in local theatres. And it was incredibly exciting. Totally fell in love with a girl there,
yeah,
who was a couple of years older than me, I remember. Now, I just assumed that once the two-week course was over, we would just be boyfriend and girlfriend,
yeah,
and that would be it. And, of course, that wasn't quite the case.
Right.
And she, it turned out, had an actual boyfriend in real life. I was heartbroken when I discovered that this wasn't going to be.
That is rough. I'm sorry, that is rough.
It was rough. Yeah, it was rough. And I think that did affect me for a long time because of this sort of obsessive nature. And here's the negative side of it, I suppose. I was obsessing about this. I wasn't just upset or heartbroken. I was obsessing about it. And it took over kind of everything. And I remember doing my English mock O-level and the essay question, whatever it was, I don't even remember what the title of it was, I just wrote about this girl and what was going on. Like that was,
God,
that became my essay. Yeah. So, and
in
I remember.
In the thick of your teens, in the thick of, yeah, hormones and, oh my God. Yeah. Yeah.
Now what did happen was that I remember at one point thinking, I am now going to make myself into someone that this doesn't happen to again.
Got it.
So I did change. There was a sort of a fundamental change that happened around that time where I started to make myself into someone Teflon proof to that. And I became, yeah, a bit of a player then after that,
yeah,
for a while. I think that, yeah, was like, no one's going to hurt me like that again. And in fact, I got back with that same girl.
Wow.
We did have a relationship and I ended up breaking up with her.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it wasn't revenge.
It. Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't conscious revenge. But looking back on it, I think there was clearly something.
There was unconscious
out
revenge then.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And yeah, yeah, and I think I was a bit like that for quite a long time. Underneath everything, I think I was a little bit like, I'm not going to get hurt.
I hope you've enjoyed this Changes Focus episode on education. Those years really do shape a person. Do please share this episode with anyone who you think would enjoy it. You can still go and listen to all of the episodes in full wherever you get your podcasts. And we will be back next week with a new Changes Focus. So thank you so much for listening. It means the world that you listen. Please subscribe to the podcast if you don't already. Changes is produced by Louise Mason with assistant production from Anna DeWolf Evans. See you next week.